Welcome to the Hospital Finance Podcast, your go-to source for information and insights that can help you protect and enhance revenue at your hospital. And now, the host of the Hospital Finance Podcast, Michael Passanante.
Welcome back to the Hospital Finance Podcast. This is Mike Passanante, and we are live from ANI 2016. Glad you could be with us. Today, I'm joined by Kathy Ruggieri, who is the Senior Director of our Revenue Cycle Services at Bessler Consulting, and Maria Miranda, who is Director of Reimbursement Services at Bessler Consulting. And we've been enjoying the conference for the past couple of days here, attending sessions, walking the exhibit hall, and we thought we'd bring some of that flavor to you on today's podcast. And so let's kick it off. I think one of the sessions, and we were chatting before the podcast started just a couple minutes ago, about the opening keynote by Dr. Eric Topol and this idea of the democratization of medicine and how technology and smartphones in particular are playing into that. So, you know, we had a few things I think that were interesting when we talked about it, you know, sort of the equipment that will change, that you know, doctors will bring different things in their bag, that the stethoscope is sort of outdated. And I think what we were talking about is, well, how does that play into, you know, the changes that you'll have at a hospital where someone maybe won't come in for an ultrasound anymore, or and then, okay, well, how does that data then get to the doctor? I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I think that I think we're used to new technology, and I think that it'll take a little time for people to get used to it, but I think that it's something that we would be open to, especially millennials who were born into, you know, having technology from the time that they're very little. So they're used to it. They're not scared of it. So I think it's definitely the wave of the future, and it's probably going to be here a lot faster than we think.
Yeah, I think one of the stats that he mentioned was about 80% of the U.S. population has a smartphone now. I'd imagine that penetration is only going to continue. But Kathy, you mentioned, you know, during this transition, how do you deal with people that were sort of not native to that, you know, growing up, and now they're maybe in their 70s or their 80s, and maybe they have a smartphone, but they're not comfortable with
right,
that.
I think it's definitely going to be a more difficult concept for our more elderly population, and, you know, it might just be something that we transition more with some of the younger baby boomers and the millennials, and not so much the, you know, the seniors. But I do think that, you know, so many people do have this cell phone. I think some of the concerns or challenges are going to be around, you know, just the privacy of the information and you know, the ownership on the individual consumer of the healthcare, of really owning a lot of the data on their cell phone. So it's going to be very interesting to watch how things really cycle through right. over these next five right. to 10 years.
Although I have to say that I'm sure that some of the older population is also very used to data. They're, you know, you can kind of segment them out. A lot of our older population is still very active, and some of them do use this. So I think there'll be a section of that population that will also adapt.
Probably so. But yeah. I think those that are in nursing homes and those assisted right. living and those right. sorts of facilities, it'll just right. be interesting to see how things really progress.
Yeah, and what's interesting too, I think, will be how your relationship with your quote unquote primary care physician will be, and if you'll even have that with the advent of telemedicine and sort of that on-demand medicine. Mm-hmm. I think one of the statistics that Dr. Topol pointed to is an average of about 2.6 weeks to get an appointment with a physician, and then you have to go into the office and you have right. to wait to see them, and you know, it's a whole process, as opposed to being able to, you know, perhaps use your smartphone and some device that's attached to it and uploading that data mm-hmm. to the cloud for a provider. And certainly there are several providers in the marketplace that offer that service today. It's probably right. not as widely used as it could be, but certainly having someone in a remote location diagnose right. your condition changes that. And, you know, I was having this conversation last night with someone, and they said, well, wait a minute, but my doctor's not going to know, you know, what happened there. And I said, well, your doctor won't need to know. Whoever the doctor was on the other end of the line will look at that. They'll probably write you the script, and they'll probably right. send that electronically to your pharmacy. And you know, so and then you're going to have to kind of manage that data, right. I think.
Well, you know, and I think that this makes a lot of sense considering the trends of where we're going with healthcare and transitioning even from the fee-for-service to quality, because so much more of the focus needs to be on preventive medicine. So having all of this technology up front and making it more accessible, I think will help us get there faster.
And accessing to some of these tests where scheduling is definitely a challenge
yeah.
today, and being able to get more real-time. And maybe you might have to go to an urgent mm-hmm. center or something like that, but a lot of right. that infrastructure is there and available.
Sure. And getting the patient more engaged, right? Because even when you look at some of the CMS programs, for example, like CJR and a few of the other bundled payments, patient satisfaction is a big deal, right? It measures into the calculation. So if you have a patient that's more engaged from the very beginning, has more access to his or her data, you're going to have patients that are better informed, mm-hmm. understand what's going on, ask the right questions, and probably at the end of the day, be more satisfied with their level of care because they understand it better. Mm-hmm. They have more access.
And I think all this, too, is going to affect the notion of what a hospital is, or what a facility could be. One of the examples he gave was the idea of the self-monitoring, and he showed a photograph of a large, essentially control room, if you will, where a hospital, quote unquote, could be monitoring hundreds or thousands of patients remotely mm-hmm. That have literally ICU level conditions, mm-hmm. but they're in their homes. You know, and they're wired up,
exactly.
and all that information is being transmitted back, and so you don't necessarily now have to have them in a hospital room. You don't have to. It's not $4,000 to $10,000 a day or whatever the cost could be to have them there. But you can treat them on an immediate basis if that's required. Probably not with everything, mm-hmm. but I think that also changes the paradigm when you're thinking about things like bed management mm-hmm. and outpatient. And what's an outpatient now? Is an outpatient in a facility? Is an outpatient at home? Probably mm-hmm. right now it's a little bit of both. But what does that mean? What will you get at home versus what you could get at a SNF or something like that? Mm-hmm. So it kind of changes that paradigm
but
too.
Having that two-way communication as well is very important, because I think a lot of the issues that our healthcare system has had. Is that you're very episodic. You come into the hospital, we take care of you while you're there, and then once that patient leaves, it's very difficult. It almost ends at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know if they're taking their medication. You don't know if they're following the protocols that should be followed afterwards. So just having patients more engaged will keep them, following the care path that they should once they leave the hospital. So that's also very important.
Mm-hmm. So let's transition. We talked. I think we all attended Dr. Vivian Lee's session, and of course she's head of the Utah Medical Center and University Medical Center,
mm-hmm.
and talked. She talked a lot about both the sort of the cost side of the equation as well as the quality side and the transparency. So can you give us a little flavor?
Sure.
Of that?
Well, I mean, it's a great segue from where we were, because what she really was talking about is how information is power, right? And so it's easier to change behaviors when you have access to the information. And one of the things that they were able to do was go within a few years, really improve their quality and quality data of their doctors. Just by making that information available to the doctors, so that at one point they could see their own data, and then as they progressed, they could see the data for all of their doctors. They've gone so far as to even put the
patient satisfaction scores,
not just the scores but actually the reviews
right.
on their website, so that if you went on their website and looked up Dr. Smith, you could actually not just see the scores but actually read the patient reviews.
And what I thought was really interesting is she had surveyed the audience and asked the audience, is anyone else, and it was a well-attended session for sure, and was any of the other facilities putting the comments and the results of the patient satisfaction surveys on for public viewing, mm-hmm. and not one person raised their hand. So I thought that that was very, very progressive.
Right.
And, you know, it was just really kind of refreshing to really hear how we, from like a finance perspective, we're so used to slicing and dicing data, and how mm-hmm. they really have empowered the physicians, you know, the leadership team, and just the their whole focus, and then just kind of sharing that and holding everyone kind of accountable and part of that, that process, and how they've really gotten on board with it. It was just very interesting to hear that was, you know, they were very competitive and, you know, really looking to really improve their score as, as time went on. So I thought that that was a really proactive approach, not something that I've ever really heard about before. So it's very interesting.
Well, and there's two things I took from it. One, and of course, part of her role was dean of the medical school. And so in talking to these new medical students that use Yelp and TripAdvisor and those kinds of things, you know, having their outcomes or their quality scores available to, you know, patients or potential patients mm-hmm. wasn't as much of a shock to them as it might have been
to that's typical, right?
This is how they interact. They rely on that data, that sort of social proof, if you will, and that's something that really wasn't a big deal to them. Not what you'd call a paradigm shift as compared mm-hmm. to perhaps the previous generation of physicians. And then, of course, the other thing that struck me is, you know, the world is going this way generally. When you think about CMS and the bundled payment programs, and of course we work a lot with CJR,
sure.
you know, quality is a big determination as to whether or not you're going to get reconciliation
sure.
payments, right?
It's quality and going back to patient satisfaction, because at the end of the day, that's really just the perception of the patient. And you may treat every single patient the same, and how one patient perceives that entire experience could be 360 degrees, you know, from how another patient. So for them, for doctors and other providers to be able to actually read that information and see how they could tweak their own behaviors or what the hospital can do to make the entire patient experience good will you know, increase their scores when it comes to CJR, because it's not just outcomes. You know, it's the risk standardized complication scores, but it's also the age caps, which is really, you know, how the patient perceives the entire experience.
And that's payer side. And so you also have the earlier stage side, which we just talked about, where they might decide, I'm not even going to go to this facility, I'm not even going to see this physician, because I don't like their score, or right. I don't like something that someone wrote, because I think they also posted the verbatims, right, at the University
yes,
of Utah.
They posted all the comments.
Right. So
I think they only screened out anything that was
libelous.
Liable type comments. Right. But she said those were few and far between.
Very
everything
few.
Else mm-hmm. was included in public.
Right. Okay. So, you know, up front, there's a revenue component in terms of, will I even make that decision to engage your facility or that mm-hmm. or that physician, and then on the backside there's the payer side who's
right.
saying, well, that experience better have been good,
exactly.
or we're not going to pay you,
right.
you know, the full amount or what have
you. You know, when you think about it, they're really positioned, you know, taking this really patient-centered care approach to that next level. They're really positioned for, you know, all of the plans for CMS, like you just talked about mm-hmm. with quality indicators and all of those things. They're like a step ahead, so it was right. really refreshing to hear there.
And it seemed to be very well received by the physicians. You know, once they got used to the idea, they're very, like you said, receptive to having that information.
Well, and the information even
and
in terms of cost.
I think
they flipped the scales, right, and said, okay, well, what does it actually cost to treat? What does it cost mm-hmm. to, you know, have a physician or, you know, a surgeon, for instance, you know, perform a procedure? Not only the physician's costs alone, but also the equipment that they're using and the time that's spent in the suite, and actually costing that down on a per physician basis. Again, another point of information mm-hmm. that the physicians could use to try to improve yeah. their own performance and their own bottom line.
Right. Well, and physicians love information, right? They're trained to analyze information. So the more information you give them, the better it is. So.
But it's you know, it's the classic business school
sure.
paradigm now, right? I'm looking
Absolutely.
At my revenue and I'm looking at my costs.
Sure.
And I think while hospitals and healthcare generally has always kind of done that,
mm-hmm.
that transparency now is making it more like other industries have maybe already
exactly.
looked at that information, right?
Exactly.
So I think the last point we wanted to touch on, which actually touches on the patient experience part of it, was the payment. So now you have so many plans that people are on that are high deductible plans. It could be a $5,000 or $10,000 deductible that you have to pay. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons why that's difficult for people, not only to come up with that money maybe in the first place, but then also to even know what their impact could be. And so I think here at the show, we've seen some solution providers and some talk about how that gap might be filled, right?
Sure. And that's very difficult for our industry, right? Because we've been accustomed to being so completely segmented. You know, you get a hospital bill, you get a bill from your anesthesiology, you get a bill from the doctor, and it's very difficult. This is probably one of the only industries where you walk in and you don't know what you're paying for until, you know,
six months later down the road
yeah. Once they get their insurance and everything else, and you're also in a state of vulnerability because you need the services. But I think that there's definitely a change now because we're in this consumerism environment where a lot of us have very high deductible plans, and we were just walking around looking at some of the vendors and talking to some people, and we've come across some solutions. Do you want to talk about that one?
Yes, I think there's just some new solutions out there for the provider, you know, for us to be able to manage in this environment of the high deductible plan. I mean, the high deductible plan has kind of been evolving over these past few years, and then just even more recently, it's very, very difficult for people to manage. And like you talked about, there's multiple bills and so forth. So we're seeing some solutions that are out there now where they're doing some more of a bundling models.
What they're trying to actually go out, and we talked to one vendor who's actually trying to go out and negotiate, for example, with hospitals to say, you know, we'll work with the hospital and come up with one bundled payment for that entire episode within the hospital that includes the physician and the anesthesiologist.
That's significantly discounted.
Exactly. So if your deductible is $10,000, if the procedure is $10,000, it's maybe 40% of what that would have been. And the patient knows right up front what that's going to cost, and they're not going to be surprised by bills later on.
And the physicians are incentivized because they're guaranteed being paid very promptly. And so it was just something different. We're not sure, not something that we've seen before.
But it can only help with revenue cycle management, right? When you think about, you know, trying to submit claims and then trying to collect money from patients and all these things, right?
I think that's one of the biggest challenges for revenue cycle directors at this point, is really being able to grapple with the self-pay balances. Mm-hmm. And so much of it is indeed a result of the high deductible plans. Yeah. And it's very difficult sometimes to actually get a definite estimate up front. And so this is just another opportunity in terms of being able to kind of solve that problem more proactively and in advance. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it really plays out and what other solutions may could potentially be available as well. So it was definitely interesting.
Yeah, it's been an interesting show. I think we've only just scratched the surface of everything that's been talked about here and what's going on. But clearly the changes that we're seeing in the marketplace are making their way into the finance space. And I don't think that there's any one solution or one vendor or any one thing that's going to solve all of these problems. But clearly there's a convergence and I think a sort of an unstoppable force of momentum now that is really going to change the industry as a whole over the next 5 to 10 years.
Left the station.
Yeah. There's that momentum is there. So the future is going to look very different. So we have a little more show to go, a couple more sessions to attend. So it was great chatting with you both, and hope you enjoy the rest of the show. Have a great flight home.
Thank you.
You too.
If you enjoy the Hospital Finance Podcast, please head up to iTunes to subscribe and leave us a positive review.
This concludes today's episode of the Hospital Finance Podcast. For show notes and additional resources to help you protect and enhance revenue at your hospital, visit Bessler.com/podcasts. The Hospital Finance Podcast is a production of Bessler Consulting.